You're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM, your campus community radio station, broadcasting to you since 1922.
When it comes to Kingston real estate, local experience matters. Kim Purcell is an award-winning realtor born and raised in Kingston with over a decade of experience and 100 five-star reviews. If you want honest advice and results you can trust, choose Kim. Visit kimpurcell.ca today for more information.
Hello, it is now 5 o'clock here at CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and you are listening to The Corridor, bringing you local and regional news from Kingston and the surrounding area, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and for our podcasts, Smith Engineering at Queen's University. Thank you for joining us. Hello and welcome to The Corridor, brought to you by Realtor Kim Purcell of Sutton Group Masters Realty. Connect with Kim today to find a new home tomorrow via kimpurcell.ca. I'm Dinah Jansen. Our top story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter Christina Laurie, covering a fundraising initiative for Lionhearts Kingston.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca. On Saturday, February 28th, Kingstonians will be braving the cold to help provide relief to those who need it most. Coldest Night of the Year is a nationwide fundraising walk, with 100% of proceeds going to local charities supporting those experiencing hurt, hunger, and homelessness. Since 2011, the Coldest Night of the Year has raised over $75 million across Canada in 190 communities. In Kingston, the fundraiser supports Lionhearts, which is aiming to raise $65,000 this year, up from last year's total of nearly $50,000 as need continues to rise. I spoke with Lionheart CEO Travis Blackmore about how this year compares to past walks, the growing need for support, and what Kingstonians can expect this year. I was wondering if you could give us some context walking into this year. What looks different this year in terms of need, urgency, and demand for Lionheart services?
Yeah, unfortunately, with today's climate and the way things are, the need has never been greater in the community. The amount of folks that are victim of food insecurity is only growing, unfortunately. So that makes us feel at least fortunate that Lionhearts is able to help in this regard, and we're honored to be able to do so. But we need help from folks in the community. It's often said it takes a village, and it sure does. It takes all of us, including our partners that donate to us, and then those frontline agencies that we do distribution and food, culinary and meals for. Yeah, it all ties together to bring together a community to make a difference. And Coldest Night is one of those fundraising moments for us in the year that's very important. Gets us outside, gets us moving together as a community, as a group, to raise awareness, but also to raise funds to continue making that difference throughout the rest of the year.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned there, need has never been greater, both in terms of immediate pressures and projects in the works. What kind of things will these funds raised this year be going towards?
For sure. Well, when we do our food rescue, it is quite an operation, and it's no small task. So a lot will go toward helping move those trucks and move those vehicles. Last year, in the first 6 months, Lionhearts gathered and distributed over $10.5 million worth of goods and got that, made sure that that food was put to use in the community, making nutritious meals and also being provided to agencies to make meals as well. There's a number of other projects that Lionhearts has, including our supportive housing, but also our mobile markets for those that are elderly and living in food deserts, as well as student food boxes. There's a number of things that Lionhearts does in the community, and this will all go to reinforce that and help us in 2026.
Mm-hmm. And Lionhearts is already at 49% of its $65,000 goal, a bit of a higher goal than last year. How are you feeling so far with this early momentum?
Honestly, Kingston is one of those generous cities. There's a bunch of generous people living there. So the fact that we're about to hit that 50% mark is so encouraging. It's usually always right at the last couple of days that you get really close to that goal, because that's just the nature of fundraising. But other things like coming to the end of the month and awareness and all the things that we're grateful for, even folks like you helping us get the word out there to those and just reminding them that they can make a difference. There's still time to sign up a team or join a team or contribute to a team, or just even hitting that share button is a big, big help. And so honestly, I'm grateful to the Kingston community and how they rally behind us each and every year.
Mm-hmm. And going into this year, I was wondering if you could share just a few of the ways that folks can contribute and offer any last words of encouragement to get the community out on the 28th.
Yeah, of course. So if you are to go to CNOY, coldest night of the year, CNOY.org, and search Kingston, you'll see Lionhearts right there. You can click inside the website to make your donation. If you have a friend that's walking, you can contribute to their walk. But I would challenge you, if you own a business, sign up a team, represent your business, get out there, create awareness, rally folks behind you. If you're an individual, you can still start your own team. Get together some colleagues or people from your circle of life that you walk with, you can still make a difference. If you go to our Facebook or Instagram or our X-Job, you can click the share button. And again, it's all about creating that awareness. You never know who is in your circle that will feel moved to contribute in a meaningful way. And all of these things add up to making Coldest Night of the Year a success.
I feel like every year we hear about just the vibe on the day and how inspiring it is and hopeful. I was wondering if you could just speak to that and what folks can expect this year in alignment with past years.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when we kick off, we like to motivate folks and really get across our appreciation for them setting aside the time and wanting to make a difference in their community. The mayor will be there to give some words to the community. We'll all rally together and begin the walk halfway through. And our amazing sponsor, Starbucks, will provide hot and cold drinks again. They've always been a huge support for us in this community, so massive hats off to Starbucks. And then we'll again return back to our host venue, which is Kingston Gospel Temple, and there'll be hot food, refreshments, and also live music this year with Andrew Van Horn and the Celtic Kitchen Party. So we like to have a good time. I mean, it's heavy subject matter, making a difference, food insecurity, people struggling. But, you know, in the true Canadian spirit, we can have fun while we try to take care of those that might be struggling. You know, that's what the Canadian spirit is all about.
Once again, that was Lionheart CEO Travis Blackmore on Coldest Night of the Year 2026, taking place on Saturday, February 28th. This year's Kingston Walk will begin at the Kingston Gospel Temple at 2295 Princess Street and finish at the Indigo Starbucks at the Cataraqui Center. Walkers will travel up to 5 kilometers, beginning shortly after 5 p.m. Coldest Night of the Year is family-friendly and open to people of all ages and abilities, with route options designed to be accessible and welcoming. Once again, you can visit CNOY.org for more information. For CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, this has been Christina Laurie.
Thank you, Chris. Next up, we have a story from the LJR reporter for The Kingstonist, Michelle Dory Forstell, about a potential new medical hub in downtown Napanee. A long-vacant downtown Napanee building could soon be transformed into a much-needed medical hub as the Council of the Town of Greater Napanee prepares to decide whether to sell the municipally-owned property at 12 Market Square. Council was to receive a report at its regular meeting on Tuesday, February 10th, recommending the sale of the property to pharmacist Deepak Danani. The proposed development would include a pharmacy and a walk-in medical clinic aimed at improving access to primary care in the community. In the report, Michael Nobes, the town's general manager of growth and infrastructure, recommends that council authorize the sale for $380,000 plus HST and waive the town's standard conditions attached to the transaction. Nobes notes the proposal would return a long-empty municipal building to active use while addressing local gaps in access to non-emergency medical care. According to the report, the property was declared surplus and listed for sale on the open market in August 2025 with an asking price of $495,000. No offers were received by the October deadline, and a subsequent offer submitted afterward was not accepted. Council later approved a price reduction to $395,000 in November. Danani's offer was received on Wednesday, January 21st, and reviewed by Council in a closed session on Tuesday, January 27th. Nobes reports that Council then directed staff to proceed with accepting the offer, pending final approval by bylaw. The report explains that the purchaser plans to redevelop the building into a multidisciplinary healthcare hub, including physician practice space, a walk-in clinic, and an integrated on-site pharmacy. In a letter summarized in the report, Danani outlined his experience developing and operating similar integrated pharmacy medical clinics in Ontario, including facilities in Belleville and Trenton. The proposal is described as a long-term community investment that could also generate local employment. The report notes that the facility is intended to serve unattached and underserved patients in Napanee and surrounding areas and could help reduce pressure on hospital emergency departments by providing centralized access to non-emergency care. The proposed sale includes a $25,000 deposit and a closing date of March 30th. Nobes reports that the offer does not include a conditional period because the purchaser had completed due diligence before submitting it. If approved, proceeds from the sale would be directed to a reserve fund for revitalization of the Market Square precinct, consistent with previous council direction. Nobes estimates gross revenue from the sale at $380,000, with net proceeds of approximately $352,500 after commissions, legal fees, and other costs. The sale would also return the property to the tax roll, generating an estimated $3,000 in municipal tax revenue and eliminating roughly $5,000 in carrying costs for the vacant building. Thank you to Michelle Dory Forstel for that story. Coming up, we have a story from Owen Fullerton, LJR reporter for YGK News, on the provision of federal funding to five local life sciences companies. Five early-stage companies in Kingston are sharing more than $280,000 in federal funding through the Helix funding program delivered by the Kingston Economic Development Corporation, or KEDCO. The program was launched last April and offers health and sciences companies with matching funds between $10,000 and $100,000 for scaling costs, particularly focusing on innovation and advancing commercialization. Ben McKilcom, KEDCO's investment manager of life sciences and health innovation, says the program works in collaboration with a network of over 20 health and sciences programs in the area called the Validation Network, which helps connect companies with access to expertise, equipment, and services that generally are out of reach. He says previous work with the City of Kingston helped identify needs that early-stage companies have while trying to take steps forward. There's a broader area of services needed, like help with Health Canada, FDA approval, helping with AI, and clinical trials, McKilcom said. The first cohort of companies selected through the program are Control Inc., a femtech startup developing a Class 2 vaginally inserted bladder support device for women experiencing stress urinary incontinence, eTransplant, a group developing a secure patient-centered digital application to modernize communication between kidney transplant patients and their healthcare teams, Lens Inc., developing a non-invasive smart contact lens system for continuous monitoring of intraocular pressure in glaucoma patients, MDetect, developing a liquid biopsy platform for the detection of multiple cancers, and finally, Octane Innovation Inc., advancing a wearable electromagnetic field device designed to treat chronic pain. McKilcom added that KEDCO is also in the process of building a wet lab that greener companies can utilize in their early years to help address what he says is not only a big gap in Kingston, but all throughout Ontario. The lab will operate as a co-working space with companies paying subsidized rent that graduates to market rent over the course of 3 years. McKilcom says that this will act as a space of incubation, which combined with funding opportunities will help companies to advance professionally, and the goal is for the space to continue to welcome new companies. And given the lack of lab space, he says there will be no issue finding tenants. The plan is to kind of get them up, ready, out, and then the next space comes in, McKilcom said. We already have a queue of companies waiting to use this space. The lab is set to officially open this March. And thank you to Owen Fullerton for that report. Coming up next, we have a story by the LJR reporter for CJAI-FM Amherst Island Radio, Ted Evans, covering Napanee Rotary Club's commitment to building a new structure for the local farmers market.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, local journalism initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca.
The Farmers Market at Market Square in Napanee will have a covering thanks to the Rotary Club of Napanee. The structure comes as a gift from the club to the town. Director of Parks, Recreation and Culture with the Town of Greater Napanee, Chris Brown, spoke about the Rotary Club's plans and the timeline for the project.
They are seeking to work with Town Council and staff, as well as the Market Square Advisory Committee, to develop plans and fundraise for a structure to be erected outside at the back of Town Hall, on the portion of the property off Center Street, to provide a cover slash roof over the section that is earmarked for the farmers market and other activities. Town staff have met with the Rotary Club on multiple occasions, bounced some feedback back and forth. This covered roof would be the Rotary Club's gift to the town to underscore their club's centennial year in 2026. Rotary Club intends to contribute a minimum of $125,000 over the course of 5 years. Which is very exciting. The next step, so both parties agree to aim for a construction start date in late 2026 following consultation. We're hopeful that we can get a lot of the design work completed this year with a completion as soon as reasonably practical.
Brown detailed how the process will take place.
Once approved, the MOU will influence design work, which will be undertaken simultaneously with the Town Hall's interior renovation project. As part of the design process, many stakeholders, including the Market Square Advisory Committee, the Heritage Committee, Rotary Club of Napanee, and the LNA Chamber of Commerce, will collaborate to bring a final recommendation to Council for approval. When the design and costing have been determined, the town and the Rotary Club of Napanee will enter into a contribution agreement that will finalize some of these terms and conditions.
Mayor Terry Richardson showed his support for the project.
This is an exciting time. When we started talking about the revitalization of the Market Square, we weren't sure where we were going with this, but now all of a sudden all the pieces are starting to fall into place here. So I think this will be a great addition to the back of Town Hall, and it's going to complement our market, which is hit the road running this year, so and only going to get better.
For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
And thank you to Ted Evans for that story. Up next, we have a story from Sarah Williams, LJR reporter for the Napanee Beaver, on Greater Napanee and Stone Mills Town Council discussions related to impacts of a proposed high-speed rail project. Greater Napanee and Stone Mills councils both addressed the ramifications a proposed high-speed rail could have on their respective communities. Diving into the issue during their meeting last Tuesday, Greater Napanee Council received a staff report for information regarding the potential Alto high-speed rail line. As per the report, there is currently a public consultation underway for a high-speed rail project, which would see a high-speed rail network developed between Toronto and Quebec City. Currently, an alternate route for the rail line is being explored that would bring it closer to Kingston and through parts of Lennox and Addington County. Although the rail line would cut through the region, there is no plan at this point to add a stop between Ottawa and Peterborough. There are lobbying efforts underway to add a station near Kingston. On March 26th, Greater Napanee CAO Matthew Grant will be attending a regional stakeholder meeting to learn more about the potential implications of this project locally. It is worth noting that this particular rail line is a federal project. Deputy Mayor Brian Calver noted it would be nice to have more clarity on the project, admitting we don't have a lot of legs to run on as this is a federal project. After the stakeholder meeting, Grant noted staff would bring forward a report and schedule more meetings. Neighboring Stone Mills Township discussed the issue during their meeting, which was held last Monday. After hearing three deputations speak on the matter, council weighed in. A direct motion was proposed by Councillor Sherry Milligan and passed unanimously by council, opposing the proposed Alto High-Speed Rail Southern Route alignment through or near the township, and objects to expropriation for this corridor, given the lack of local benefit and the disproportionate impact on the township's agricultural land base and rural residents, and calls upon Alto and the Government of Canada to remove rural municipal lands from consideration where communities will experience disruption without service benefit, reads a report from the Stone Mills Council. On their social media page, Stone Mills informed residents Alto will host two public meetings on Wednesday, February 18th at Storington Lions Club, located in South Frontenac Township. The first will take place from 11 to 3 p.m. and the second will be the evening of 5 to 9 p.m. The Storington Lions Club is located at 2992 Princess Road, Inverary. And thank you to Sarah Williams for that story. Up next, we have a story from the LJI reporter for the Brockville Recorder and Times, Keith Dempsey, on provincial funds for the town of Gananoque's wastewater upgrades. The town of Gananoque will receive $6.46 million from the province to modernize its wastewater treatment system, a project expected to ease pressure on taxpayers while supporting future housing and economic development. Leeds, Grenville, Thousand Islands, and Rideau Lakes MPP Steve Clark announced the funding last Wednesday in Gananoque, saying the municipality will use the money for structural and treatment improvements in its sewage lagoon system. This project will modernize Gananoque's wastewater system, helping to protect the environment while supporting new housing and economic growth, said Clark. Clark, who made the announcement on a day that also included two other infrastructure announcements in the eastern end of the riding, added the province has invested more than $91 million in Leeds and Grenville through the Municipal Housing Infrastructure Program. Gananoque Councillor Anne Marie Coyner welcomed the announcement, calling it a significant boost for the community. "This is great news for our town and community," she said. "Thank you to MPP Steve Clark. We are also pleased to be receiving $6.4 million for structural repairs and treatment improvements to our sewage lagoon treatment system." Mayor John Beddoes said the provincial contribution will help modernize critical infrastructure while reducing the financial burden on local ratepayers and create capacity for future development. He noted the funding allows a $5.77 million provincial investment in 2024 through the Housing Enabling Water Systems Fund. The grant is delivered through the Municipal Housing Infrastructure Program's Health and Safety Water Stream, part of Ontario's broader $4 billion infrastructure initiative within its $220 billion capital plan to support housing, job creation, and infrastructure renewal across the province, provincial officials have said. And thank you to Keith Dempsey for that story. Up next, we have a story from the LJR reporter for CJPE County FM in Picton, Brenda Little, about the Prince Edward County Chamber of Commerce Business Excellence Awards.
Hi, I'm Craig Foster, local journalism initiative reporter and news director at CJPE 99.3 County FM in beautiful Prince Edward County. Coming are some of the top stories from PEC. You can hear County FM news 5 days a week, six times a day on 99.3 County FM, the voice of the county, or stream us at 99.3countyfm.ca.
The lobby in Prince Edward County's Regent Theatre was buzzing last Thursday night as the business community came together to celebrate the 2025 Prince Edward County Business Excellence Awards, presented by the Chamber of Commerce. There were winners in eight categories, including two new ones, Agricultural Excellence and Young Entrepreneur Under 35 Years of Age. Janice Duffy was awarded Entrepreneur of the Year for her business Serendipity Yoga. She started Serendipity just over 5 years ago and has expanded her business quickly to include two studios, outreach sessions, private instructions, and a yoga instructor course. Janice and her husband Jeff chat with me about the business. And how long have you been doing this?
Oh my goodness. Well, we started Serendipity Yoga in March of 2020, right at the peak of COVID, with a practice that was available online only. That was the only thing accessible to us, accessible to our clients. And then from there, we branched into having an in-home studio. And we have now got a studio in Bloomfield and in Picton in the Armory.
You've expanded quite quickly. How did you get started with yoga?
Jeff and I were actually training to do the County Half Marathon, and we were training throughout the year, and we came to a point where winter was coming, and we knew we wouldn't be able to be out training as much as we were, and there was a group on for a studio in Whitby, where we were living at the time, and I purchased that group on for both of us, and we were hooked. So our practice became very strong, and then from there we were invited to take part in their yoga teacher training program. So we spent many a weekend together over about 10 months of time, and from there we then became certified yoga instructors.
Janice, you grew up in Prince Edward County, is that right?
I did. I was born at Point Peter, and then I grew up mainly in Cherry Valley.
and moved away.
Well, as we all did at the end of high school, you know, there wasn't as much then as there is now in the county. So moved away for school. I was away for far too long, but very glad to be home.
And what brought you back here?
Well, one day we were working from home during COVID, and we looked at each other and said, why are we working from home in Whitby when we can work from home in Picton? So we packed up, and here we are, and we haven't looked back.
What else would you like to talk about?
You know, I think people have a certain idea as to what yoga is. Mm-hmm. And I would really like to work to change what that preconceived notion is. Yoga is really an opportunity for people to come together, to practice together, to build community, to move in a way that's safe, to breathe, and just find a better place for themselves. And that's really what I have strove to do since the very beginning, to have that safe place where people can come as they are, to be who they are, to work against this epidemic of loneliness that we have in the world right now, and to feel better when they leave than they did when they came in. Mm-hmm.
And the two of you started this. Now you have several instructors.
Well, yes. One of the things that I created over the last 2.5 years now is a yoga teacher training curriculum. So I put together the curriculum and submitted it to the Canadian Yoga Alliance, and they gave me their stamp of approval, and from there have rolled it out. And based on that education program, that training program, have instructors that I feel very secure in the fact that they're going to come forward and be a shining example of who I feel a yoga instructor should be.
And for what you stand for.
And for what I stand for. Yeah, my expectations are high, that I hold myself to, as well as to those around me, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And I just, you know, we're in a place of trust, and we are on our mat to serve, and it takes a certain person to do that in the way that I feel that is necessary.
I spoke with the CEO of the Prince Edward County Chamber of Commerce, Duarte De Silva, who feels it's important to recognize the hard work and effort that goes into running a business in the county. He highlighted the difficulties businesses face with tariffs, limited workforce, and housing difficulties, and acknowledged that not everyone is cut out to be an entrepreneur. He stated the importance of setting aside one night to recognize, celebrate, and reward the efforts of chamber members in Prince Edward County. For the Local Journalism Initiative, frequencynews.ca and CJPE County FM, I'm Brenda Little.
And thank you to Brenda Little for that story. Next up, we have the CFRC Environment Canada weather forecast for the Kingston region. Tonight, we'll have mainly cloudy skies with winds becoming northeast at 30 kilometers an hour before morning and a low -4. On Wednesday, we'll see cloudy skies with a 40% chance of snow in the afternoon, wind northeast at 30 kilometers an hour gusting to 50 with a high -1. Wednesday night, we'll see a period of snow with a low -6. On Thursday, a mix of sun and cloud with a 30% chance of flurries and a high of 0. Thursday night, we'll have cloudy skies with a low -4. And the outlook for Friday is cloudy with a 70% chance of snow with a high of 0 during the day and a low -6 at night. And if you're looking for some fun, interesting activities to do this Tuesday evening here in Kingston, Ontario, Tom's Tuesday Happy Hour Jam is currently underway at the RCHA. Bon Evans is at Spearhead Brewery starting at 6 p.m. And there is an open mic at Musiki at 8 p.m. You can also check out Fiercely OK Song Circles at the Community House located at 99 York Street starting at 6:30 p.m. And finally, Daft Brewing is hosting its weekly Euchre Night at 7 p.m.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit CFRC.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via CFRC.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us.
Mom and Dad don't look so hot these days again.
Hey, this is Sam from Punk is Dead Radio. Tune in every Monday night at 10 p.m. for everything from pop punk to proto punk to hardcore. on CFRC 101.9 FM.
The we is how we see the world, which is that everybody is made up of lots and lots of different personalities, fantasies, attitudes, and that a multi-personality is in fact the reality, not the I personality, and that where those two things meet is the position that we're trying to work at, to break people across from seeing themselves as one-dimensional and having no potential, to seeing themselves as being almost anything they want to be, and that those different things don't have to always agree in the usual accepted way.
No Static, every Monday from 6 to 8 on CFRC 101.9 FM and CFRC.ca. You never know what you're gonna get.
Welcome to Grad Chat, your opportunity to find out about graduate research here at Queen's. My name is KM on the FM, and I'm your host for this week's Grad Chat. A show like this could not happen without the support of the School of Graduate Studies and Postdoctoral Affairs and CFRC, so a big thank you to both of them. If you miss the show at any time, you can download the podcast the next day on either iTunes, Google Podcast, Spotify, or CFRC Podcast. It's a great way to stay informed about all the exciting research our graduate students and postdocs are working on. And today, I'd like to introduce you to Maximilian Bezenski, who's doing a PhD in philosophy under the supervision of Dr. John Miller. Welcome to Grad Chat, Maximilian.
Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. And as usual, before we dive into your research, I do like to ask people a little bit about how they came to be at Queen's in the first place. So what has your academic journey been like so far?
Sure. Probably a little strange. I'm from Regina, Saskatchewan, originally, and I did my undergraduate there at the University of Regina. I actually started in engineering.
Okay.
And then sort of 3 years into that, figured out that wasn't the way forward and switched into philosophy, committed myself to going to graduate school, and then applied all around a little bit. And Queen's was a wonderful opportunity, the best opportunity of those that were there. And I moved to Kingston in, about, I guess, three and a half years ago now. And I did a MA in philosophy first and applied to PhDs around again, but also added in an application because of how competitive PhD applications can be, added in an application to do a classics MA here as well as a sort of fallback because my research is in ancient philosophy, as we'll get to. So that kind of made sense to do an extra buffer. But then they accepted me into both programs anyway. And then after some sort of discussion, advice from my supervisors and so forth, the best way forward was to just sort of squeeze that 2 year MA in the classics into 1 year, defer my PhD start by a year. And then so in the end, I did an MA in philosophy here, then a classics in archaeology MA here, and then started the PhD in philosophy here.
Oh, very nice. So yes, so not particularly linear, but still very relevant, it sounds like, the way you came to the program now. So you mentioned, like you said, that your research is related to ancient philosophy. So your topic is contemporary significance in Stoic ethics. Can you tell us a little bit about what that project looks like?
Sure. So it's the culmination of my last few years of research. I got interested in ancient philosophy at the end of my undergraduate, and Plato especially, and so forth. And then had picked up a little bit of Marcus Aurelius, whose Meditations are a bit of a popular book right now. And then I had a different project in mind for my first MA, but after that, really just focus right into stoicism and looked at, in my classics MA, the contemporary popularity of it, which we'll talk a little bit about in a bit. It's around the internet, floating around the internet a bit. And I took a look at that, and then that really helped me prepare to just dive into to something properly full-bodied, I guess, for a four-year, you know, dissertation and PhD project, which is primarily a defense of Stoic ethics and their value for now. It falls into the category of virtue ethics.
Okay.
As opposed to something like consequentialism or utilitarianism, might be a familiar one, or deontology, Immanuel Kant maybe might be a familiar name, or something like a religious ethics or Christian ethics falls into that kind of rule-based system. But this is properly Greek, obviously, and that whole time period and philosophers, all of their sort of ethics focus on whatever virtue is and being a good human being in character and developing and cultivating a good character for the sake of flourishing and being happy in a sense, or achieving a state of eudaimonia is the Greek word, which sometimes we translate as happiness, but more so it's really doing well as a human being, flourishing. So Stoic ethics fits squarely into that ballpark, focusing on virtue, and I think it's a well-placed ethical system for now and the details that they go into. And I aim to, through a series of topics about today's issues, sort of defend Stoic arguments as a positive force, or can be. They are a bit of hopefully a positive role now. They're gaining a bit of popularity online and so forth. And I think that's good, but more can be said sort of more formally from an academic perspective on how those ethics can be productive now. I guess I'll say that.
No, that makes sense. And it's, I think, like you said, it's Stoicism and those ideas are hitting kind of pop culture again, although I'm sure they never really leave, but they reemerge at different times, and right now they seem to be reemerging. But I think it might be helpful if you could explain, like, what is Stoicism as someone who studies it for, you know, our audience? What is Stoicism?
For sure, of course. Well, it's a Greek philosophy in its origin from post-Plato, let's say, post-Socrates after that, but following in the Socratic tradition, stemming from, you know, about that time, let's say, until roughly the reign of Marcus Aurelius, the Roman emperor in the second century. So that's roughly the end, spans from about the Greek origins, moves over to Rome, and sort of booms, especially in the ethics, in the context of Rome and the Roman Stoic philosophers, really starts to focus on ethics. And that's more so the ones that I'm interested in. Not that the Greek philosophers didn't talk about ethics, but it was a little bit more robust on the themes. So it's a importantly holistic philosophy in that they try to make their doctrine consistent throughout all philosophical topics. They talked about metaphysics or physics or sort of what we call natural philosophy and ethics and logic, epistemology, and they intend it all to fit together. Every proposition is consistent with the others, and or is, you know, based on more basic claims. So it now has gained some ground, especially through authors like Marcus Aurelius, sort of the last Stoic philosopher-ish. It's, you know, debatable whether he's properly Stoic, but he's at least influenced. He's reading the previous Stoic philosophers from the Greek and then Roman tradition. And the most famous work that people may be familiar with, if they've heard of Stoicism at all, is going to be Marcus Aurelius' Meditations. And then maybe some of Epictetus's Handbook, we call it, or the Enchiridion is the Greek word of it, or they may have heard of Seneca and his extensive works. So those are what are sort of circulating largely. And then there's, of course, their predecessors in the Greeks, like Chrysippus or Zeno, people may have heard of. Zeno's Republic, people may have been familiar with. But for the last decade and a half, something like this, it's kind of surged in popularity. And there's a few reasons for, how to track the trend of the growing sort of cultural popularity and phenomenon of it, which we may or may not get into, but for example, COVID was apparently a big factor in the increased sales of Marcus Aurelius's Meditations, just as one example. But before that, I mean, is a bit of a larger trend from about the 70s, kind of 80s, when academics picked up Stoicism a little bit more, especially somebody named A.A. Long was fundamental to an increase in increased academic interest in Stoicism. And that came around the time of a bit of a push of an academic interest in virtue ethics more generally, which turned into other things like modern forms of virtue ethics. But there's still a pretty good interest in virtue ethics in the academy, Greek virtue ethics. So hopefully that situates what Stoicism is.
Yeah, no, it gives. So it sounds like it's. I mean, in how you reference to COVID, right? When it makes sense that during a time of a lot of upheaval and change, that people are looking for a holistic approach to living a good life or to living well. They're looking at during COVID, as we all remember, in lockdown and different things, maybe our lives weren't looking as well as they could. So we're looking at, makes sense that people were looking to others and figures who've, lived well in the past to say, okay, well, what did you do to make sense of their current situation?
Well, it's an easy philosophy to make very personal and appeal very personal on the individual level, especially with something that's just called The Meditations. And it's Marcus Aurelius's Personal Reflections, a book that was never meant to be published from himself. So it's something a reader can easily relate to, I think. And they are authors that focus a lot on personal development, and especially what's popular is how they handle the emotions. And at a time like COVID and other examples now, which we could get into, are examples of problems where people are looking for personal solutions to difficult emotions like depression, anxiety, or anger, even at the world and social situations. And the Stoics talk a lot about how to regulate one's own emotions. And that's a big popular point of attraction and something that I talk a lot about in my research now.
So could you tell us about kind of some of your interests in Stoicism? You started to touch on them a little bit and maybe some of how those interests are showing up in how topics you're addressing in your dissertation research itself.
Sure. Well, exactly like I touched on then, my immediate appeal was probably the same kind of popular appeal, the things they have to say about the emotions, the most radical proposition of which, and interesting, is to place essentially total responsibility for emotions on the feeler, let's say, of those emotions. They are not only your own responsibility, your emotions are your responsibility, not only in a technical sense, well, both in a technical sense and a moral sense. So now it gets a little complicated in the responses, but to lay it out initially, yes, it's sort of a moral blame, is maybe a too loaded a word, but one can be blamed for their own emotions in the sense that they're your own fault in the sense of if you have a character fault, there's something a little bit off about you. If you have too quick of a temper, that might be a character fault, character deficiency, or something like that. And that is something that is resides in you and the way you are. So that is where we can look to if we want a solution to that emotion. They're not going to say, let's find something that happened out in the world that made you feel bad. They're going to find that cause technically in your own self. So for example, if I do lose my temper, let's say, that's an easy one, because I spilt my milk or something, you know, don't cry over spilt milk. Well, they're going to agree with that in a very technical sense, and that, well, it's you that responded to the milk falling over. Now there's a huge mess to clean up. And if I get upset about that, that emotion resided in my processing. They're going to say judgment, my judgment, my reasoning about the event. But even if for, you know, modern scientific reasons, we don't like that word, you know, judgment, like it all resides in how you think and you can just change it that, you know, that easy. That is kind of what they say, but you know, there's some modern, you know, psychoanalysis that might, you know, sort of try to pinpoint, you know, more brain function. But that aside, they are trying to at least identify very basically that your reaction to the spilt milk and being upset resides in your mind. And the mind is something we could change to not have a reaction. It's very possible that somebody else could have a reaction to the spilt milk and never get upset. In that very logical kind of way, it wasn't the milk being upset or somebody, even more controversially, maybe someone who insults you. You know, we might want to say, well, you made me upset. You hurt my feelings. But it's very possible that somebody else could be on the receiving end of the same kind of insult and they never get upset at all. They're not fazed whatsoever. And so you wonder, okay, so there's case A where you had this insult and the person didn't get upset. And there's case B where the person did get upset. And so it seems like the cause of getting upset is actually not in the outside world. It's not in the insulter. They don't actually have the power to make you upset, even if they want to. It technically is with you, and that gives you now some control. Well, it doesn't give you, it's just there, they argue. You are the one, you are the thing. It's up to you how you feel in a very real way. Now, that's not to say it's easy to just change it all, but that's the way it is. And that's, to a lot of opposing modern views, is going to come across radical and controversial in those kinds of moral senses where we want to blame something else a lot of the time for how we feel. And they say no. So that is, to come back to the question, is a big appeal for my interest in it, and something that a lot of people find value in. And there's a whole swath of consequences from that kind of basic position to appropriate behavior and personal development and cultivation as a person and a good person, and something that can help you find especially peace for people in troubled times. That's largely why it seems like people do get interested, is because people are online and they're maybe feel alone a lot of the time, isolated, especially more and more today for a whole host of other reasons why we're more and more isolated. But then something like Stoicism, people can come across on the internet where maybe they already are on social media, and they find something like this that gives them a real sense of ability to make a change. Alongside, it's not special, it's alongside a lot of other online, you know, content creators and people on YouTube and so forth who give this air of encouragement, I guess, that you can and do something for yourself. There's, you know, tons of other examples.
So with that, if that's one issue you're addressing in your dissertation, are there other areas you're exploring and that you see that you're pulling apart to see how Stoicism still appeals and still has relevance in the modern era? What are some other topics that you're doing the same kind of analysis to?
Sure. There's about maybe seven different topics I could talk about right now that'll, you know, become chapters in their dissertation. So maybe I'll walk through each of them and you can jump in.
Sounds
question
good.
If you like. The first thing I address in my dissertation, or will address, is a little bit of a more technical problem before I kind of move properly to the how great the ethics are.
You've got to lay the foundation, right, to bring people into the work, right?
Yeah, it's the problem of might be a little complicated to explain, but I'll do my best. There's a metaphysical problem in Stoicism that is a bit debated right now, and it needs to be addressed to be able to say that we can, in fact, continue a Stoicism. We're not just cherry-picking their advice. We can actually act in the way they're suggesting. We can take a full holistic approach to our lives and our ethics and be Stoics, if one is so interested in that. And we're not just picking a little final conclusion of their arguments. We're really taking the whole thing. And the problem in doing that a lot of people find is the religious framework that the Stoics in their context are coming from, that them being in the time of Greco-Roman religion, Zeus and all the rest of them. And for the Stoics, that comes out in their philosophy in terms of a god or providential divine kind of order in the world. I won't go into their arguments for defending it, but they find the world to be ordered rationally by something divine. And we now, or most academics or interested parties generally in the culture, aren't really interested in that. They're coming from a more secular attitude generally, and they want to, or just do, ignore or disregard those metaphysical or religious, maybe pseudo-religious underpinnings in that. They don't want to worry about, when they take the ethics and how great those are, they don't want to worry about, oh, I have to now subscribe also to these sort of religious underpinnings I don't feel make sense for today. And unfortunately, you can't really get away with that. Some academics want to then try to figure out, how can we extract the ethics that we like from these sort of, divine notions? And you kind of can't. And in my first chapters, I try to argue for how we can still make sense of it. And in a certain kind of a way, we can subscribe to those metaphysical notions of there being a rational ordering to the world. And I'll explain a little bit, try to just very briefly and simply explain how I see that can work now. So the very basic, the most basic and crucial ethical axiom from the Stoics is that you should act in accordance with nature. And by nature, they mean the universe, this thing that rationally orders itself in a kind of a deterministic fashion. So you want to act along with it, go along with it, because you can't really do otherwise. It's all kind of fated. And they use these words like fate. You have to follow fate anyways. So go along with it, act in accordance with. And the way you're going to do that is using your reason. The world is reasoned, it's ordered in according to a reason, and the way you're going to follow it is to use your human reason. So that's like their most basic position on ethics. That's how you're going to be wise and good and virtuous. So there's necessarily this component of subscribing to this rationally ordered kind of a world, which maybe makes people a little weary. But I do think it can make sense, and there's some... I rely on a work I looked at recently. This was a problem sort of for the last couple of years of my being interested in this. And I now, through another very interesting course on hermeneutics and phenomenology, which may be sort of strange, philosophical terms for the audience, but phenomenology is just a philosophical branch of trying to assess phenomenon in a very plain and straightforward kind of way, just describing it as it appears, we might say. So there is a contemporary phenomenologist by the name of Jeff Mitcherling, who I did a course on with Dr. Paul Fairfield here, and his central work from to the year 2000, maybe it came out, maybe a little after that, doesn't matter, but was a book called Aesthetic Genesis, colon, secondary title, The Origins of Consciousness in Intentional Being, something like this. which sounds very complicated, probably. And I rely on it to basically find a modern example of something that sounds very much like what the Stoics are getting at when they talk about the divine ordering of everything, when he relies on this concept of intentionality in his work, that there's in the world, it sort of has direction. And he argues it from a very modern kind of point of phenomenological point of view. And he tries to be very much a realist about approaching the world, not necessarily in a secular way. He doesn't necessarily get into that kind of debate about secular versus non-secular, but just that to, well, kind of leave it just with that without getting into too many details, that he does argue in a convincing kind of a way, and you know, people can maybe look it up if they want to know more. His arguments can get kind of funny, but that there is some sort of intentionality which can be read as a bit of directionality to the world. And that seems to me, in my kind of first chapters, that I argue that is kind of what the Stoics are getting at. And we can kind of read them like him, or like a realist phenomenologist is the kind of camp he's in. And that in the end, the conclusion being that the Stoic metaphysic is a just as well of a contender, basically, in other sort of philosophies of metaphysics. It's not something to scoff at. And so, therefore, we can actually genuinely be Stoics, basically. We can continue that school and not say, oh, all of their metaphysical stuff doesn't matter, because it has to. You can't really extract it, I don't think. So there is a way to read them such that we can say we are now Stoics, or some sort of following in that real tradition. So that's the first one.
Yeah, it seems to make sense, because like you said at the beginning, that it's a holistic approach and a holistic philosophy. So to for people to leave out the context in which these ethics were developed seems kind of impossible to do. And then so by you making this more modern interjection, like you said, using some work of more contemporary phenomenologists to still read those ethics as and metaphysics as they are, but to read them in a way that makes sense with the world in the 21st century, just as it would, you know, reading it differently in the context of it was written in, you know, in ancient times. So it sounds like you're covering a lot of ground in your dissertation. And I want to thank you so much for coming on today, and it's been great chatting with you. Thanks for doing the show, and best of luck with the rest of your research. We'd love to have you on again to chat more as your project develops. So that's it, everyone. Another week of Grad Chat comes to an end. Don't forget, you can download this show tomorrow from either iTunes, Google Podcast, Spotify, or CFRC Podcast. Just search Grad Chat. And until next week, this is KM on the FM.
Vai marinheiro, vai, vai buscar a Laurindinha. Vai marinheiro, vai, ela é tua, não é minha. Sim, nosso é, com toda a certeza, o programa Atlantis, que transmitimos dos estúdios da CFRC no quadrante 101.9 FM, em sistema de cabo 90.9, aos domingos das 18 às 20 horas, com locução de Eduardo Pereira.
Vai marinheiro, vai.
Had a 6-transistor when I was a kid. Under my pillow, I kept it hid. When the lights went out and no one could see, over the airwaves the world came.
Hello, friends and listeners of Way Back with Johnny. This here's your old host with most country western music and bluegrass music, Johnny Woodlock. I'd like to invite y'all in to join me and my furry companions, Simbush and Gunny, every Sunday morning from 8 to 11 as we bring you 3 hours of only the best in country and bluegrass music, also including special interviews. This is where the legends of country music and bluegrass live.
I watched it all on my radio.
Vibes? You know about vibes?
The mood.
Tune in every Wednesday from 10 until 11 a.m. while I explore themes, atmospheres, or moods across genres and decades. Whether I'm scoring a scene or doing a genre deep dive, there'll be something for everyone.
I'll give you another tune to help your appetite.
The mood was made.
I'm radio.
C-F-I-C. The best radio station we've ever heard.
What's going on with the world, Tanya Dongas Gigon, then on the Wadahusa Dutch, Ungahu and Hadi Wanodas, Nene Abbott.